Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good Wednesday morning, everybody. Hope your day is off to a fantastic start. Hope you're having a great week so far.
Hey.
And guys, we all made it. We all survived Cinco de Mayo. We are all here bright and early on Seis de Mayo. And looked like everybody had a pretty good night last night.
Not bad, man. I, not bad. You know, I had a little of experience where, you know, I ordered my food at 4 o'clock to be picked up by 5. And I wind up getting it at 7:15-ish, getting back to the house at 7:30. Because I waited in line for about two and a half hours to pick it up. And I understand the restaurant. It just, I think they underestimated the, you know, what it was going to be like. And they had a skeleton crew probably in there. And they just didn't execute it well. And, you know, it became a little frustrating to a lot of people that was waiting in line. And the line went long. And, you know, my back hurts right now for standing up for two and a half hours. But other than that, it turned out, you know, it's like I'm waiting. I'm getting teed off the longer it goes. But then once you get home and you get back with everybody and you're sitting down out in my front yard as the kids water balloon fight took place. And we set up a area in the front of our driveway where we had a little bit of social distancing for a couple of our friends, and we all kind of just, you know, set out and talked and chopped it up. It felt better. You know, when you get there, it's like, finally. Because the only thing I could think of is sitting in the line. It's like, damn, these people over at my house, and they starving.
Oh, you were picking up for everybody.
Yeah,
You weren't just picking up for your family. You were picking up for the whole group.
Yeah, I was picking up for the entire group.
Dude, you are a much more patient man than I am, Keith. Because
well, you know,
after about half hour, 45 minutes, I've been like, man, forget this. I'm gonna go do something else.
The problem was I paid already, and I mentioned to them at least three times, check and see where my order is. If it's not, if you look, here's the deal. If you did not, this is what I'm telling them. I said, if you did not submit the order already, just cancel out the order, return my credit money back to my credit. That's all you got to do. And they kept saying, oh, let me check, you know, and then they go back and they come back out and they ask 20 other people, oh, Stacy, order for this, Bob, and never got back to me. So I'm sitting here throughout the entire time there avoiding the whole situation. And finally, at the end of the day, the one dude's like, oh, man, I'm so sorry, man. Let me make sure it gets out right now. It finally came out after 2 hours. And it was fine. Like I said, I got home. I understand where we're at in this country. And so that was it.
That is some wonderful perspective. That's some good adulting right there to be as patient as you were. What about you, LZ? You have a good night?
I had an amazing day. Not just night, day. So I started off, after I got done with the show, I started making the lunch. And lunch, we had nachos. But as you guys know, we have two different sets of palates. We got vegetarians and we got carnivores. So I made one set of nachos with beef chorizo. And then I made another set of nachos with like the veggie crumbles chorizo. So we munched on that. I was making fresh mango and jalapeno margaritas all day. Like all the tequila's gone. I got to get more. It's all gone. And then at night, I made the mahi-mahi tacos with the fresh cilantro and limes, had the cabbage, the shredded cabbage, the little crispy tacos with just right. And put them on a little skillet and got them nice and brown, just perfect, and just munched on those all day. And we finished the leftover chorizos in addition to eating all the mahi-mahi while listening to La Chona. And so,
did you crumble?
I'm sure you got emotional at some point.
The funny part was my son did come up to me and it, just out of the blue, and it was like going, man, Selena died so young. And I was like, I know, dude. And so we were like, this is Selena. And then we switched over to Dylan and Carlos Santana. It's a good night.
Did you take your take a taco shells and crumble them up for your nachos?
We actually didn't do that. We had the actual tortilla chips, my friend.
Nice. All right, you get your card back.
Hey. Made by Ortega.
Nice, nice.
Now, but no, you, on the other hand, Travis, you put a pretty good spread together.
Oh, you did, Travis. I'm proud.
What was the green round things? What was that, cactus or something?
No, that was the salsa verde that I made. I roasted some tomatillos, jalapenos, and habanero peppers with a little garlic, roasted garlic, and just kind of blend. That was a blend, food processor, the round thing, Key.
Oh, so I know what a food processor is.
Yeah, a blender?
Just put it together. Trying to put it together. It's a food processor. Blender has a pitcher. This doesn't have a pitcher. And it was great. Made a little pico de gallo, made some shrimp, made some carne asada, some pollo with
it was right.
Lime
All I could
garlic.
Do is say, based on the phone and the picture, it was right. If I could somehow climb through the picture, I would have been all right.
Well, I've been trying to tell you this for a while. You always make a face. You always do the frogs on the face thing when I tell you that I know what I'm doing. You say I don't season my meat right.
Well, the chicken didn't look seasoned, but that was the chicken. Oh,
no. The chicken was lime, a little olive oil, garlic, salt. It was right.
It was.
Jorge, did I have it right?
Oh, yeah. Especially when you said roasted stuff, roasted this. Yeah, you got it right.
It looked right, man. I was impressed. I could tell you probably cooked it and not Susan based on what it looked like, but that's what
Well, we did a little hike after the show. We went for a little hike up in Laguna Canyon, and then we came back, and I took a little nap to get ready for the rest of the day, and then went to work with the knife. And
yeah, they opened y'all back up down there, too, so...
Yeah, we're ready to go. We're ready to go.
They'll close y'all down again because y'all gonna something stupid on Memorial Day. I'm sure. I mean, on Mother's Day, I'm sure.
The only thing missing was the mango jalapeno margarita LZ sound because we just had a couple of cold beers. That was the only drinking we had going.
No, but it
tasted pretty good anyway.
Listen, the Margaritaville machine sits on the counter and it doesn't go away. So iced margaritas, frozen margaritas are a constant in the house anyway. But for this, I had to go and get some fresh produce because I wanted to make sure it was right. So I got the perfect little mangoes and I got the mango juice in addition to some of the other things and then the fixings to make sure that it was perfect.
And then you, Jorge, you had about 400 bottles of Modelo Especial on ice that looked amazing. Talk about having it right.
Somebody left them on ice all morning, so then I just got there and they were nice and chill. So that's the way
nice.
It
goes.
And Raj, right. you're here this morning. That's a bit of an upset, I think.
It's a minor miracle, gentlemen. Let's just say I was up late preparing for the show, up into the wee hours of the morning with some friends and a female nature, and it was fun.
Perfect, perfect. So we all made it. Sounds like everybody had
female
a good day.
Female in nature. Hold on. What do you mean in nature?
Man, I don't even. I let that go right. You see how he's doing. I'm gonna just let him do what he do.
Key, I was like, in nature. What? I'm a little confused. What are you trying to say?
Nothing. I was surrounded. It was a good time, though. It was a good
time. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Check the Adam's apple.
Oh boy. Now it's finally going into a place. Now it's absolutely going into a place. Well, Look, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to tell you that I thought for sure that of the five of us that are here every day doing this, that at least one person would. I don't think anybody was going to not show, but I would have bet that somebody would have been arriving late this morning. And we all made it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, no, we all made it. And I had one of the reasons I like doing this show early in the morning and coming off of things like this and pushing myself to do it rather than laying in bed and waking up with an excuse not to do it is yesterday I went to the grocery store and a gentleman, an older gentleman, approached me and he said he listened to us every single morning and that this has gotten him through the coronavirus. He got him through this pandemic. Every single morning he's listened to us. He doesn't miss one second at all, despite having on a UCLA football hat. That was, I thought, and I said thank you to him and everything. So I just want to tell him, I don't remember the gentleman's name, but I just want to tell him thank you on the air. He knows
absolutely
who he is. And so that's a big deal. And this is the reason I would get up regardless if I had a female in nature around me.
No, that's great to hear. That is because, you know, look, it's odd because we're all disconnected. We don't get to see each other other than an occasional FaceTime call. And I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad that people are still getting a chance to do that. And if, like we mentioned a couple of days ago, if anybody else wants to call and tell us how great we are, you can do that too. 877-710-ESPN. 877-710-ESPN. Charles Barkley says he and Michael Jordan are still not good after nearly 20 years. We'll get into that next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. The Last Dance has been dominating our world, the sports world, for the last several weeks. And we're more than halfway through. We've watched the first six episodes, episodes 7 and 8 coming up on Sunday at 6 o'clock. You can see them on ESPN and stream them on the ESPN app. You can get caught up on 1 through 6 as well on the ESPN app, ESPN On Demand. Charles Barkley went on the radio in Chicago yesterday with Waddle and Sylvie and was talking about his relationship or lack thereof with Michael Jordan. Remember that these guys were tight for a really long time. Then Michael went on the air, or excuse me, Charles went on the air and was critical of Michael's running of the Bobcats at the time. And basically, that was the end of their relationship. That Michael cut him off at that point. And Charles is saying, look, I have to tell the truth. I have to tell him what I thought was going on with his team at the time. They were terrible. I can't say that they were great. And fast forward, the better part of 2 decades later, they still don't have a relationship. And it's another brick in the wall of how Michael Jordan lives his life. It's just, you are either in or out with MJ. There is no middle ground.
I know. That pains me to the core. Because, you know, it's Michael, it should be smart enough to understand in situations, former athletes turned television personalities have a job to do, not only for the network, but also for the viewers. And when an athlete gets teed off about you, speaking of, or anyone gets teed off, not just an athlete, it could be a general manager, it could be anybody that gets teed off about you criticizing what they've done is ridiculous. You know, it to hold on to that for 20 years. You know, the Isaiah thing, I get. I understand that. Maybe some other things in sports, but not this. Not a job that's being done. You shouldn't hold grudges. I can't hold a grudge against LZ for 25 years because LZ said I dropped the ball. I just can't. I can't do that.
This is who he is.
What makes him him.
But you got to let that go. I remember many years ago when Matt Leinart played for the Arizona Cardinals, and he got himself into a little hot water, no pun intended. He was in a hot tub with Nick Lachey and some, you know, young women from, I guess, Arizona State or wherever it was at. And he's, you know, rightfully so. He could do whatever he pleases to do. He was they were age appropriate, and he was age appropriate to do whatever he wanted to do. But when a video surfaces and you're the quarterback of a team and there's high expectations and you're not playing well, you're going to get criticized. And so I basically, you know, lit his ass up on Countdown, and he got mad at me, and he wouldn't speak to me for, like, you know, a couple years or whatever the case is. But I had to explain to him. One day you're going to get into this profession, and you're going to have to make some decisions. And look at him now. He's in television, and he has to make some decisions. They're going to be tough decisions about, you know, things that come up. You're going to have to talk about people that are close to you, have been close to you, and you got to make that choice. How you approach it and how you deal with it, how you deliver that information could certainly fracture that relationship long term.
You know, it's so funny because – we've known this about Michael Jordan for forever and a day. And if you had any question about his level of pettiness and his ability to hold grudges, just go back and listen to his Hall of Fame acceptance speech. And no one left that. We'll put it this way. I have a hard time believing anyone heard that entire speech, walked away thinking Michael Jordan was anything other than a grudge holder. And petty in a lot of ways. And I'm not saying this because of the Bulls riding with the Pistons and blah, 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 blah. No, I'm saying this because it's true. I'm saying it because if you listen to his acceptance speech at the Hall of Fame, you realize that he remembers, he keeps a file on every slight, whether real or perceived, and he uses it to fuel himself. Now,
see, I don't mind, but see, LZ, like for me, I don't mind the acceptance speech. I don't mind that, but let after you say what you said at the speech, then you cool. Let that go. That's cool. After I check Charles Barkley for saying what he said about me running my team, I'm cool. I ain't tripping. You said that. I'm going to check you, and I'm going to keep it moving. I'm not going to hold on to that. That sort of stuff I'm not going to hold on to. You cut me as a junior in high school. All right. You obviously don't know talent. And if you did, you would have never cut me unless you was trying to fuel me to do something else. I got that. I get that. You know, I take swipes at people all the time that say stuff or have said stuff about me as a player. I take swipes at them and laugh. I mean, I remember when I had to go to junior college, I wasn't going to be anything. I remember those people. I remember them. Every time I see them, I tell them all the time, I'm not going to run out. Don't ever worry about that. That ain't going to never happen.
Let's take a listen to Charles. Here's Charles yesterday on the radio in Chicago talking about his relationship and how it has deteriorated with Michael Jordan.
The thing that bothered me the most about that whole thing, I don't think that I said anything that bad.
No.
Because I'm pretty sure I said, hey, as much as I love Michael, until he stopped hiring them kiss asses and his best friends, he's never going to be successful as a general manager. And I remember I'm pretty much verbatim I said that. And the thing that's really pissed me off about it later is Phil Jackson said the exact same thing. And I'm like, no, man, if you're going to be – because, listen, when you're famous, and Michael at one point was the most famous person in the world, everybody around you is either on the payroll or letting you buy drinks and dinner and flying around on your private jet. Very few of your friends are going to be honest with you. And that's very hard – for any celebrity, but especially somebody of his stature. But I thought that was one of the reasons we were great friends. He's like, I can ask Charles anything, and I know he's going to give me a straight answer. But part of my job is, because I can't go on TV and say another general manager sucks, and then just because Michael's like a brother to me, say he's doing a fantastic job. That would be disingenuous.
All right, so that's
true. You're absolutely right, though. He's absolutely right. You can't do that. It'd be, like you said, disingenuous. You can't do that. You just can't.
Well, Michael feels differently, obviously. Michael, listening to Charles tell that story, it doesn't sound, and I don't want to be a psychologist here, but it doesn't sound, Michael doesn't want friends that are going to tell him the truth. Michael wants people that are going to tell him what he wants to hear. That's probably why the Hornets or the Bobcats or whatever incarnation of that team is going on is almost never successful. It's because he doesn't want to hear dissenting voices. Anybody that's really good at what they do, you need somebody in your life to say, hey, that's not right. You need to do better over here. This is a problem over there. You need some feedback that is maybe not the most positive thing in the world, so you can add those two things together. Charles is right. Of course Charles is right, but if you want to be in Michael Jordan's orbit, you better understand that that includes never, ever, ever criticizing the boss.
Well, at the end of the day, Michael does, I mean, he did do a poor job at running teams. That's for sure. It's well documented. And if he's Michael Jordan, the way that I know him, all he got to do is look in the mirror, man, and just say, you know what, I'm doing a bad job, and understand that. But maybe he's not.
He knew he was doing a bad job. He knows what a good job is, what a bad job is. I think the thing about Charles Barkley's quote isn't that it summarized what he was doing with the Charlotte team. It almost summarized his life. If you listen to it, it might have cut too deep to the white meat. By saying when you're famous, remember, he's been famous since like 82, 83. And so by saying you're surrounding yourself with kiss asses and yes men, essentially, you're basically saying your entire life spent in front of the camera, you've been surrounding yourself with yes men. And that makes you look weak. And the Charlotte Bobcats are an extension of that. So I can see why Jordan would be offended by that. But at the same time, if that's your boy and you've been rocking and rolling for decades and decades, you should be able to have a conversation and squash that. you should be able to squash that relatively easy, because you guys, if your boys have been through enough where you know what you can say and what you can't say, and you can be able to work things out. Michael Magic Johnson and Isaiah Thomas squashed their beef. They eventually squashed their beef.
They did. Even if you don't deal with him no more, you don't have to deal with him on a daily basis, you shouldn't hold a grudge like that. I mean, it's just look, man, Barkley's doing a job. If Barkley wasn't on TV and somebody was just interviewing him and he went off on him, that's a different story. Like Charles Oakley just did to Patrick Ewing when that's different.
That felt personal. The criticism of Jordan from Charles Barkley wasn't personal. It was the team's not very good, and here's why. That wasn't a personal attack on his. No,
it was personal. It was through the lens of the Charlotte Bobcats. But again, if you listen to what he's saying,
no, it's not personal though. It's not personal. I wouldn't take it. If Barkley said that about me, I wouldn't take it personal. I would give it as constructive criticism. Where Charles Oakley said about Patrick Ewing, he lost a game for them against the Chicago Bulls because he was sitting around trying to shoot fadeaways instead of pounding his 7-foot butt down low and dunking on people. That to me is personal. If I'm Patrick Ewing, I'm gonna take that personal.
To me, it's not personal.
But you calling me soft, that's personal. You called me soft. Charles Oakley called Patrick Ewing soft. Did he not, LZ?
Let's get into that, because that's an interesting comparison between the two. The criticism of you running your team and the criticism of you blew the game for us. Is that the same thing? That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
GEICO gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, social security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my social security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Some of these guys in the Korean League can absolutely hit bombs. I'm watching some highlights from the KBO. Home runs are flying out of those ballparks, guys.
I know. I was watching that,
too. Shout out to you, Tommy.
I was watching that, too, and saying to myself, man, he just hit a bomb. It looked like a brother, but I wasn't, you know.
I think you're right, Keith.
He was a brother, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's an American playing over there. There's a lot more American players in that league than I thought. There's a couple of pretty big handfuls of American players.
And they're not social distancing either.
Yeah.
Well, the cheerleaders are. The cheerleaders in the stands who are cheering.
I'm talking about the players. The players is right up on each other.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. Hopefully it works out, because once you get a couple of things that do work, more likely that we get it back here sooner than later. All right. So let's go back to what we were talking about a second ago. Charles Oakley was critical of Patrick Ewing. What he said was, talking about the series that the Knicks and the Bulls had. Remember, Charles Oakley, of course, was part of those Knicks teams. Patrick, at the end of the game, he'd get double teamed. He'd shoot fadeaways on double teams, and that hurt us as a team. My thing with Jordan is, it's not like he beat us by 20. Most games went down to 2-3 possessions. Y'all made shots. We didn't. The best player won. Michael was a better player than Patrick, hands down. That's personal.
I mean,
that's personal because I wouldn't, like me, I ain't really trying to get into all that. We lost the game. You know, we wish we'd have won. I'm not supposed to be talking about we at the end of the game. It came down to a few possessions. You shooting fadeaways and hands down. All that, that's personal. You can tell it's some stuff that's there. But I always kind of, living in New York and being around the Knicks a little bit in that environment, it was always some issues that took place between those two anyway. So I kind of get it.
If Michael Jordan is the GOAT, that means he's the greatest of all time. And if he's the greatest of all time, that means every single player on that court is second to him. That's Charles Oakley's quote.
But you don't have to emphasize
it's the shoot fadeaways part. It's the shoot fadeaways part. If he just said, look, Michael's the best player in the world. We had Patrick, and he's not as good as Michael, and we lost. Okay. It's you started shooting fadeaways. That very, for a guy that was as big and as powerful and as physical as Patrick Ewing was, for him to say, you know, our best guy started to shoot fadeaways, that's a shot at his toughness. That's a personal attack.
No, I mean, listen, here's the thing. He said that he didn't pass out of the double teams and started shooting the fadeaways. So he was essentially saying, you try to take the game in your own hands like you were Jordan, but you weren't that dude. Remember, part of the quote is, you were double teamed and you shot fadeaways. So Charles wanted him to pass out of the double team and shoot into the open guy, but Patrick Ewing was trying to be that man by shooting over the double teams the way we see Jordan shoot over the double teams in that same time period. I don't have a problem with it. Now, I thought Patrick Ewing.
Well, won't you ask Patrick Ewing if he got a problem with it?
I thought Patrick Ewing should have dunked the ball against the Pacers instead of shooting that finger roll that popped out. But he traveled anyway, so it's a new point. The reality is that Patrick Ewing had lost to Jordan in college. He lost to Jordan in the pros, and taking shots at him for not being as good as Jordan isn't necessarily breaking news. He's not as good as Jordan. Okay. Nobody is, according to anybody who thinks that Jordan's the GOAT. So why is that such a big deal?
You don't think Jordan the GOAT?
Yeah, I think Jordan is the most – listen, when it comes to the comparison of LeBron James and Michael Jordan, this is where I lie. Michael Jordan is by far the most competitive and offensively talented and efficient player in the history of the game. By far. But if you're asking me if a guy who is as big and as strong as LeBron James and can essentially do everything that Jordan can do is a better player, I'm going to say yes, simply because he's bigger and stronger and there's no drop-off with anything else.
I love LBJ to death. And he's a phenomenal player, and he's one of the top dudes to ever do this thing, on and off the court. But he can't do everything Jordan did, man. Jordan did some stuff that, you know, hang time in the air, double clutch, underneath the basket, whip around, lay. I mean, come on, man, stop. I mean, I get it. We're in a different era. I get it. He's 6'8 and 260 pounds. Jordan was 6'6, you know,
255
or whatever. I get that comparison in size and all that, but he can't. It's just different.
MJ's looks more dynamic. MJ looks better. MJ looks sweeter. When MJ goes to the cup,
Michael Jordan,
he's nimble and he's entertaining. He's in the air and it just looks
Michael
dope.
Jordan doing reverses and clapping. You know, I used to do that when I was in high school. You know that? I tried to do that multiple times in games.
You hear that right there, LZ?
That's the layup, and I clap when I got fouled.
Yeah.
And it goes in.
Yeah.
Man, nobody, come on, man. Dude was doing layups and clapping.
I think the differences aren't physical to me. Obviously, Michael was more dynamic in the air. Obviously, LeBron is a lot bigger and stronger. The difference between these two guys, and I think this is kind of sort of what Charles Oakley was getting at, is that Michael, and this is not a criticism of LeBron, it's more of an elevation of Michael Jordan. This is not saying that LeBron doesn't do this. This is saying that Michael does this more. Michael always found a way to get it done. Michael always made that shot. Michael always had that ball go down when he had to have it. And
LeBron's got shots like that too.
That's why I prefaced it by saying this is not saying that LeBron doesn't do that. It's saying that Michael does it more. And this is what makes Michael Michael. All of these things that we're talking about where Michael holds a grudge against a person that we thought was one of his best friends for 20 years because of some mild criticism that Michael Jordan carried around his high school coach for 40 years because he didn't make the team in his sophomore year, that all of these things, that's what makes Michael the best, is because there is no such thing as a little thing. Everything was a big deal to him physically. They're virtually equal. They're different sizes and do things a little bit differently, but their games are roughly the same. It's that maniacal, freaky, weird, quite honestly, unappealing side of Michael Jordan that makes him the GOAT.
Yeah, he's vicious.
Yes.
There's no question about it. And you know, well, he wouldn't have made that shot. Well, look, LeBron has shots that that went down. Kobe had shots that went down. I guess at the end of the day, when you look at Jordan, you almost can get up off the couch and go to the refrigerator and say, well, I know what's getting ready to happen. I'm not even worried about this.
Exactly.
Where LeBron, you had to sit and wait to see it go in. Jordan, yeah. You can leave the room and know, oh, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. It's not, and I
why are you laughing, though, LZ?
No, that's why guys, I set it up with.
I'm the one that saw Jordan most between the three of us, and I did, and I can say
that. What makes you think you've seen Jordan more than me?
Because I was there at the very, very, very beginning, right? You were still over in L.A. I'm in the conference. I'm in the division. I get to see him way more. I'm watching Michael Jordan.
Man, shut up, man. You ain't seen Jordan no more than me.
I'm sorry, because if you're categorizing it as you don't recall Michael Jordan missing clutch shots,
man, you just got some old disdain and hate for MJ. Stop, man.
No, it's called history, dog. It's called history.
You're looking for an open wound to stick a knife in. Break time,
Damian
Travis.
Woody. Damian Woody from ESPN.
You making stuff up, dude.
Join us next.
You need to stop making stuff up.
Stop hating. You're a hater.
Stop making stuff up.
LC's a hater. Twitter blast him.
On 710.
You making stuff up.
All right, we're looking for Damian Woody. He'll join us here coming up in a little bit. And Key, kind of going back to what we're talking about with Barkley and Michael Jordan. You mentioned that Matt Leinart got upset with you when you were critical of him being in the hot tub at one point. Were there other players that got upset with you for being critical of whether it was play or off the field stuff or anything like that? Were there other guys that got out of joint?
Not anyone that displayed it. Matt just kind of, you know, Trojan. You know, the Trojan love, the NFL mm-hmm. brotherhood. I mean, it just kind of, you know, my nephew took a swipe at me doing a collective bargaining agreement this past year when they was trying to pass the offseason, when they were trying to get everything done with the collective bargaining agreement. I sided with the league and the NFLPA, and he took some swipes at me on social media, but his ass then deleted it because I was going to knock him out when I saw him. You know, he was trying, thought he was going to be cute. You know, said something about, oh, I'm big and bad, I'm on TV now. Something real slick. You know, he done made it, so he's slick now. I can't wait to see him when I'm going to show, check him and grab him by his collar and let him know. You know, I almost said some stuff on air I couldn't say, LZ, a minute ago, but yeah.
But the reason I ask is because if you're literally talking about Matt Leinart got upset because there's a Trojan connection and maybe your nephew, you know, got upset about something you said, that's two things over a really long period of time. The point being, I think most people understand that the criticism is going to come and that it's part of your job as an analyst, your job as somebody who's an opinion giver is I'm going to tell you what I think about this. It's not personal. And yet Michael takes all of this stuff personally, well, even if the criticism is fairly benign.
I think Michael probably, you know, when a relationship is 20 years, right, or longer or whatever it's been, and as close as they were, thick as thieves, hanging out, gambling in Vegas, flying, just doing what they do, golf, Olympic team, all of those sort of things, that's a close friend. And I think that probably, you know, hurt Michael to the core that a close friend like that would criticize him from a national standpoint, knowing that people like LZ, I sound like Michael Thompson now, people like LZ would write about it after the fact and add fuel to that fire. You know what I'm saying? Because once Barkley said it, now all of a sudden everybody is going to start attacking Michael and what Michael was doing, right or wrong. You know, I think, and I'm just speaking, I don't have the knowledge of it. I'm just speaking how I would think that at the end of the day, if LZ was to say something about me, like, oh, yeah, Keyshawn, blah, 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 everybody would pick that up, and now they would run with it, and it adds fuel to the fire. So that's
so you're not going to talk to him for 20 years? I mean, that's what we're talking about. I mean, I get being upset.
It depends on what it is. If it's saying – no, I wouldn't trip on that. Because I know it's his job, so I'm not really tripping on that though. That to me is so minor. At the end of the day, I can't even, because what I would say is, your ass can't run the team either. That's why you on TV. And I'll come back at him and just bam, and it'll be over with.
The thing, I remember being on set.
And you ain't won no championship, so you can't come through this door. Stand outside.
And I had written a piece that had ticked off an athlete. And we were going back and forth on Twitter, you know, and
I defended
why I wrote what I wrote, and he and a couple of other people came at me on Twitter, and we went back and forth. It was all public, blah, blah, blah. Fast forward a few months later, I'm on set. Here comes one of the athletes. Got to interview him. We look at each other. We do the interview, and then I go up to him. I said, hey, man, I didn't mean anything personal. This is just my job. And we talked. We worked it out, and lo and behold, today we're friends.
Oh,
never write anything.
A heartwarming story.
Never write anything or say anything you can't say to someone's face. That's always been my rule of thumb. If you can't say something to their face, then you shouldn't say it.
Okay, that's interesting, LZ. Because and can you tell me? Do you think because to your point, LZ, your rule of thumb: don't write or say anything. Don't write anything in the newspaper. Don't say anything on television or the radio that you wouldn't say to his face. I firmly believe that Charles Barkley, if those guys were on some golfing trip somewhere and Charles said to him, hey, Mike, you know, if you guys want to get this right, you're going to have to get some guys in that are going to tell you the truth.
Well, Barkley said that he thought that Michael would understand that that's why they were close friends, is because he would just, you know, he didn't need him for nothing. He just let him know what it is.
That's what I'm saying, that he would absolutely say that to his face. He would absolutely say that privately. So why can't he say it publicly? And why, if he said that to Michael on the fifth tee of a golf course, hey, if you want the Hornets to be good, you got to get some guys in there that are going to tell you what you don't want to hear. Why is that the end of a relationship that appeared to be a really special connection?
Because it says you're soft. It really does. Excuse me. It says
I don't know if it says he's soft opposed to you need people around you to kiss your ass, but I'm not gonna do it. And I think that's more what it is. You want people to carry your bags, and I'm not one to carry your bags. And I think that's more what it is opposed to you soft, because having. Not knowing how to run a team or run an organization has nothing to do with being soft.
No, but how you decide to structure the people around you, your support group.
But that has nothing. But your support system has nothing to do with being soft. It has something to do more like Barkley saying more yes man, more yes man than anything. If you hire buddies and friends at the time that he was doing that, you know, he was employing people that raised. That was whether he was raised with him or raised through the NBA with him. He's employing people, friends, instead of people that actually know what they're doing. But you know, that happens in sports a lot. Or it happens in life a lot, whether it's sports or not. You're going to hire people that you feel comfortable with, even if they don't know their job.
But it's a difference.
We see it every single day with owners now.
Who you trust versus hiring people who's just going to tell you what you want to hear.
Well,
hiring people that you trust will tell you things that may make you upset. Hiring people that are just going to tell you what you want to hear means there's a character flaw there.
LZ, you're going to hire people that you know because you trust them. It ain't got nothing to do with being soft. Because if I was to ever run a team, you best to believe it's going to be the blackest organization going, because all my family members are going to have jobs. Well, I don't care if it's sweeping the floors, washing the windows. They're going to be employed.
Okay. No, I get that. You can put your family members in there, but when it comes to putting together your staff, you're not going to hire
you're going to hire football people. One of the reasons that Michael, I'm assuming, hired at this time his friends, his buddies, his ex-teammates, his ex-whatever employers that worked at Brand Jordan, whatever the case may be, is because he trusted them enough, whether they knew basketball enough or not. He trusted them enough to say, I'm going to hire you to run this thing with me because I don't have to worry about it getting done the right way in the way that I want it done.
This is what I mean about soft. You ever see that?
Oh,
girl,
you calling me soft?
Woman, this is what I mean about soft. Let's you ever see that woman or girl who's at the club and she's wearing something you know good well she shouldn't be wearing? And the first thing I think of is, well, you ain't got no friends. Because your friends would tell you, girl, that don't look right.
All right. We'll come back to the Mr. Blackwell wardrobe portion of the program in a second. Damian Woody just checked in. We're going to talk to him next. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.